I'm Nando Vila, and from Gimlet Media, this is We Came to Win Extra Time. This is the place where we dig into some of our guests' favorite moments at the World Cup. As a Spain fan, my favorite World Cup moment is an obvious one, when Spain beat the Netherlands to win the 2010 World Cup. But today, we talk to the great English soccer writer and broadcaster Ian McIntosh about one of his favorite World Cup memories. You might remember Ian from our first episode, how the 1990 World Cup saved English soccer.
Okay, how am I sounding on your side?
You sound lovely.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah.
So let's rewind back to 1998, 8 years after that magical England run. England was in the midst of a massive cultural and political change. Cool Britannia was in full swing. Blur and Oasis had made rock and roll cool again. The Spice Girls were taking over the world, and Tony Blair's Labour Party were in power after decades of conservative rule. That year, the World Cup was in France, and England were facing their old foes, Argentina, in a round of 16 knockout match.
San Etienne is the venue. The World Cup is the stage. A place in the quarterfinals is the prize. The latest drama in the football rivalry of England and Argentina is about to take place.
At the time, Ian McIntosh was still a college student, palling around at home for the summer.
I'm watching this game in the front room of my parents' house. My mum and my dad are both there. And it's a difficult one because my mum has been brewing her own beer, which is a terrifying experience because I'm not sure anyone really knew what they were doing. So some kind of grains have gone in some kind of white sack and some water's been added and it's been kept in a cupboard for about 17 years. And this is the night that my mum has said, "Oh, let's get the homebrew out." And what has come out when she's turned the tap is kind of, it looks like a very ill racehorse's urine sample. It's pretty much... It's bubbling in a way in which it shouldn't bubble. You can't see through it. If you put a spoon in it, it would probably just sit upright and then maybe dissolve. But of course, at this point, I'm 20 years old. So I'm like, yeah, I'll try that. And I'm fairly sure that the second half I saw in black and white.
At the World Cup, England had powered through the group stage. And they'd been pretty impressive so far. In their starting lineup, they had a young, floppy-haired David Beckham, who was just beginning to turn into the major global superstar we know today. But not everyone was sold on him yet.
Clearly a very talented young player, but there's a certain kind of element of mistrust among a lot of football fans. You know, he's going out of a Spice Girl. He looks a bit flash. He's been pictured wearing a sarong. So a lot of people aren't so sure about him.
But the guy who had really captured everyone's attention was 18-year-old Michael Owen. He had burst onto the scene that year, even though he still looked like he hadn't quite hit puberty yet.
In 1998, Michael Owen looks like a schoolboy who's just kind of sneaked onto the team bus, found a spare tracksuit and just about got away with getting into the stadium. I mean, he looks about 12. He has clearly never shaved in his life. He's probably 5'7", 5'8", but you've never seen anyone move like him. He moved... Like the Roadrunner. It was like nothing you'd ever seen before. He's just meep meep, vroom, and he's gone. His legs are a blur.
They want to get on their way, and they are now. Let's see. Cameras flash around this ground.
The game gets off to a bit of a strange start. Each team gets a penalty early on, and it's 1-1 in the first 10 minutes. And then something extraordinary happens. A moment that will be remembered for years to come. Beckham gathers the ball in the midfield and loops a ball toward Michael Owen.
And Owen, with his first touch, doesn't just bring it down, bring it under control, but he sort of flicks it round and puts it in front of him so he doesn't even have to break stride, which is great because it's Owen and he's already up to full speed. And the Argentina defenders, you can see there's fear in their eyes. So they're not even getting close to him. They're just giving him room, hoping if they push him wide enough, he'll get a place to where he can't possibly hit the ball into the back of the net. But that's exactly what he does.
Worry them again. It's a great run by Michael Owen and he might finish it off.
It's an unbelievable goal, one that's gone down as one of the best in World Cup history.
And you've never seen a goal like it, not from an English player.
And for the first time in the game, England are in the lead. But just as England are thinking they're in a good spot, Javier Zanetti scores for Argentina, tying the game 2-2 right at the stroke of halftime. Conceding a goal just before the half is a big psychological blow. And this came against one of the world's best teams. Still, watching from his parents' living room, Ian felt victory was still possible. This England lineup was good, and they've also scored 2 goals. Why not a third? But as the second half kicks off, things take a dark turn for England.
The England are in possession. Beckham has the ball. Simeone clatters him, good and proper. Beckham goes down, and Simeone comes down and lands on him, knee pointed down like a dagger into his kidneys, throws all of his weight on it. You can tell, you know, he's absolutely done him. And Beckham cracks. And as Simeone gets up, probably with a mouthful of abuse, Beckham, his head switches back. There's a look of petulance and anger on his face. And then out flicks that boot.
Beckham lightly kicks Simeone in retaliation for his cheap shot from behind.
And it just catches Simeone on the back of a calf. You know, it's the kind of thing that only you probably wouldn't even notice. Right. It's the lightest of light touches. Simeone goes down like he's just had his leg amputated at the knee. He goes down like a collapsing Jenga tower. Down, rolling in pain. And the referee, Kim Møller-Nielsen, is right there.
He's right there.
I don't know, but Beckham's holding his head. I think a yellow card is going to be brandished here somewhere, and it might be to David Beckham.
It's barely even a touch. I mean, if you're going to send Beckham off, you send Simeone off as well for just being an appalling human being. But he doesn't send Simeone off, does he? He books Simeone, and then he sends Beckham off.
He's taking another card out for Beckham. It's a red card for David Beckham.
Oh, no.
Beckham gets a red card, and this is a big deal. That red card would unleash the wrath of many an England fan. And after the game, he'd become a national disgrace. An effigy of him in an England jersey, and of course a sarong, was hung outside a pub in London. He even fled to New York later that summer to try and let things cool down in England. But all that would come later. For now...
You just can't believe it. And you can see in his face, he knows his whole world has just crashed down around his ears. Beckham just ushered down the tunnel by one of the staff. And now we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, describe the significance of that. Because, you know, what does it mean to go down to 10 men just as the second half is kicking off?
It means you've got 45 minutes in sticky heat. And you've only got 9 outfield players and they've got 10 and they're one of the best teams in the world. And all they have to do is get an overload on you somewhere, double up where you've only got 1 man, they'll get 2. And they can work you and pass the ball across the pitch and stretch you wider and wider. And they can happily spend 20 minutes just making you run around and chase after them in the heat, because they know that sooner or later, the more the clock ticks down, the more those legs are going to get heavy and space is going to open up and chances are going to happen. Clever teams should always, always win a game in which they're a man up.
And how did you feel in that moment? What was your reaction like?
Like you're on the Titanic and you just heard the crunch of ice against steel. You weren't getting out of this. It was Argentina. If it had been Tunisia, if it had been Colombia, maybe Romania, you might have had a chance. But it's Argentina. You know, how are you going to get back into this? And that's it. Or at least you think that's it. But somehow the rear guard holds. Somehow through 45 minutes of the second half and 30 minutes of extra time, England hold out and take it into penalties.
Meaning England can still pull it off. They actually have a chance to win this thing.
It's just one bit of bad news. It's a penalty shootout and we're England.
Yeah, describe England's relationship with the penalty shootout for people.
We don't get on well with penalties, the English. But equally, no one has expected us to take Argentina to a penalty shootout when we've been down to 10 men for so long. So, you know, this is the only way we're going to beat them. Right. And maybe this is the way we beat them.
Argentina are up first.
Argentina take the first one. That's Berti. And he scores 1-0.
So Argentina have scored, and then England have scored through Shearer. And then, yeah, Seaman saves from Crespo, and there's a shaft of light. So up steps Paul Ince, and he misses.
Yeah.
So Ince misses, Veron steps up, he scores, Merson steps up, he scores, Gallardo scores, Michael Owen. It's then Michael Owen's turn, fourth penalty, so often the critical one.
Yeah.
This is a vital kick. This is a really vital kick for the 18-year-old.
And he turns to Alan Shearer, apparently, and he says, Alan, what do I do? And apparently Shearer turns back to him and goes, just put it in the f***ing net.
Wow, did you ever doubt it? Did you ever doubt it?
Michael Owen scores.
Well, look at that.
Ultimately, it all comes down to England's last penalty. If they miss, England lose.
And now it's David Batty's turn. And then you have the historic moment on British TV where the commentator, who has Kevin Keegan in the box with him, he says, quickly, Kevin, will he score? And Kevin Keegan, with all the natural judgment that's made him so famous in football, says,
yes.
Yes. The answer is, of course, no.
Argentina go through and England go out.
By the end of the game, I'm a wreck. And my mum's home brew has contributed to a large amount of my problems at that time. But I'm emotionally exhausted. It feels like, in a weird kind of way, you knew it was going to happen. It feels like this is what it is to be English, to lose on penalties again. There's that crushing disappointment that comes from what had hitherto been one of the best summers ever that now seems like all the light has gone out of it.
And I'm curious to know why you picked this game as one of your most memorable World Cup moments.
It's because, first of all, it was the most extraordinary drama that you could get in a football match. You have two very different but equally compelling halves. The first half is just two really good sides running at each other and then going in at halftime 2-2. And the second half is just a kind of a game of chess. So you had two very, very different games of football. But in both of those games of football, England excelled themselves. It was very much a sort of typical English heroic defeat.
Right.
We're really good at them.
Well, Ian, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Oh, no problem. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We play hard every week on We Came to Win, even when it's a smaller extra time episode. Our team is made up of producers Gofanim Putubwele, Emma Morgenstern, and Emily Ulbricht. The subs waiting in the wings are Anna Foley and Jasmine Romero. Our talisman is our captain, senior producer Matt Nelson. The experienced veterans on the team are our editors, Caitlin Kenny, Devin Taylor, and Jessica Weisberg. Sound design, mixing, and good looks come from the one and only Bobby Lord. I'm the unruly host, coasting on my reputation, Nando Vila. If you enjoyed listening to Ian McIntosh and his lovely British accent on this episode, you can hear more of him on the Totally Football Show podcast. You can subscribe to that on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We Came to Win is a production of Gimlet Media in association with Fusion. We love hearing feedback on the show, so rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also tweet at us using the hashtag WeCameToWin. I love to talk sports online, so I'll probably respond. You should also follow Gimlet Media on Twitter. The handle is @GimletMedia. Next week, we're back with a full episode of We Came to Win. We'll hear the story of a World Cup legend and one of the fiercest competitors the tournament has ever known, Hope Solo.
I was going into that World Cup to come out with one scenario, and that's to win gold. That's it, to be World Cup victors. There was no second place. There was no third place.
And before we go, I'll leave you with Ian McIntosh's description of Diego Simeone, the guy who got Beckham sent off.
Simeone could teach today's players so many lessons in the dark arts. He was an absolute monster. If you just had one camera on him for the entire game, you would see stuff that you wouldn't be able to screen on television. And this was a game of him at his very, very darkest.